Hello and welcome to All You Ever Wanted to Know. I am Jordan Patswold. We have guests in studio and also joining us over the phone today, the last Friday of the month, heart to heart with David Disty. And David, it's great to see you.
It's good to be back, Jordan. Thank you.
Well, like I said, there is a guest joining us on the line. I'll let you introduce him and, how you became acquainted with this individual and how you met him.
Yeah, so on the line with us today, we have Dr. Scott Sells. And so I went to a training in Saskatoon a few months ago and that Scott Sells put on. And he's developed a way of working with families called the Family Systems Trauma Model of Therapy. And so he's written a few books. So he's written Treating the Tough Adolescent, Family-Based Step-by-Step Guide, Parenting Your Out-of-Control Teenager, Seven Steps to Reestablish Authority and Reclaim Love. And his latest one, which the training was on, is called Treating the Traumatized Child, a Step-by-Step Family Systems Approach. So I've been really eagerly learning about how to work with trauma in the family. And Dr. Sells, he's been putting together a great way of doing this work. So welcome, Dr. Sells. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, David. It's a pleasure to be here today with you and Jordan. So, thank you very much.
Well, it's very relatable information we hope to speak with you about, because as two fathers and raising them in this 21st century world full of technology and all kinds of things that other generations have never encountered before, I know for us sometimes it seems scary to raise our kids in this world, doesn't it, David?
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much going on, and trauma is so common and something that we're becoming more and more aware of in our culture in general and in the counseling field working with people. It's good to know about trauma and how to deal with it in our families, but then also for me professionally too. And one thing that I really appreciate about Dr. Sells is how he broadens the definition of trauma. It's not just something that happens that puts you at risk. It's not just something like witnessing a car accident or being attacked or something like that. It's a broader thing. So Dr. Sells coined the phrase interactional trauma. So Dr. Sells, can you tell us a little bit more about what trauma is in your understanding?
Sure. I mean, I also am a father of two twin boys, David and Jonathan. So I experience a little bit of trauma every day in a good way sometimes. And so I don't have all the answers, but some of the research I've done is that I see trauma in two ways. One that's really more common that people really recognize, and one that's much less common, but they're both important. The first one is most people have heard of this as an event, a traumatic event. All of us have had those. It could be something really big, like an unexpected death of a loved one. It could be, seeing abandonment or a divorce or loss of a friend. You know, there's and your interpretation of the trauma, what might impact someone might not impact someone else just as much. The other one I've seen more and more, especially today, is interactional trauma. And what that means is that when you're finding that you're putting out fires with your children. You're waiting for the other shoe to drop. And there's really a lot of conflict. Over time, the nurturance goes away. I talked to a family the other day and he said, you know what? I never thought about this, but 0 to 100%, 100% I'm nurturing with my child, 0% not at all. I'm only about 10% now nurturance because I'm spending so much time in what you call the interactional trauma that I didn't even realize it. So when you are a parent, you want to look at both areas, because if you're having arguing and fighting all the time, it's like pulling the scab apart every time it starts to heal.
And as we know about scabs, just picking at them, you're not going to make it any better.
Mm-hmm. Right. The good news is that once you identify something, you can fix it. The approach that we use at the Family Trauma Institute is that families are, you know, old school, so are we, where, you know, they've had the trauma, they want the tools. And I've always found that families and children will do well if they can. I'll repeat that because it's so important. Children will do well if they can. Parents will do well if they can. Mm. We just sometimes in our society lack tools to get unstuck and to to identify and then move forward in the here and now. Mm-hmm. I think that's an important concept.
Yeah, so often we parents will look at their kids and think, oh, that kid's being so terrible, and blame the kid. But really, the kid's doing the best with what they have. And like you said, likewise for the parents. They're not trying to be parent poorly. They're doing the best with what they have. And so good news is, yeah, we can come in and help. We can grow, and we can grow together as a community.
Yeah, I mean, in this month's article, for example, I was working as a consultant with a family. It was a 16-year-old girl named Lucy who had been bullied since the ninth grade, and then that was the traumatic event. Mm-hmm. And as a result of it, she hurt so bad that hurting people hurt others, and so she started to be very aggressive verbally and physically with her family, and her family didn't recognize the trauma piece as much, so they just backed away from her, which just further enforced her feeling that she was worthless. And so there was interactional trauma, you know, constant fighting. So it just fed off each other. So when I came in, we identified that. And then the tools that we used was to give the family a playbook so that they could start to hug Lucy again and love her and say that she wasn't damaged. And it was a beautiful situation where Lucy just broke down and just in tears. Because she kept saying, I thought you guys had abandoned me. I thought you guys, I was just dirty. I was worthless. And so that was an example of identifying the trauma. And we call it kill the spider, because the spider sometimes has all these cobwebs, where the cobwebs are when we medicate our wounds through drinking, aggression, all kinds of things. But the spider lurks behind the cobwebs. And so once we identified that the real problem wasn't Lucy, but it was the spider of shame, hurt, trauma, then the family was able to look at the situation differently. And of course, new possibilities led to new change. So that's an example, I think, of children and families will do well if they can.
Well, and I think that's where it just goes to show something like counseling, getting help for someone who, like in your example, how, yes, Lucy had, it seemed that, you know, she was dealing with a lot, but also then just working with more than just Lucy, the family then taking and recognizing that they as well had their own part in being able to help Lucy go through something that at its core wasn't about them, it was something else, and how they had their own part in helping with Lucy get better and overcome some of the things she was dealing with, and knowing they could play that part.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge for your listeners to get, is that we still are in a field where we just treat trauma individually.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things I'm hoping through the Family Trauma Institute is that people will start to see this as a family issue, and children will get better quickly. Because a recent study that came out in Time magazine really showed me how big the problem is. Right now, the latest statistics are showing that anxiety and depression is really skyrocketing in our kids. So about 6.3 million teens are reporting anxiety disorders, and at least 3 million teens, 10, 12 to 17, are having at least one major depression episode. And so when you see the school shootings that are happening, when you see the social media that's out of control, you're seeing that many, many kids are like the canary in the coal mine, saying that things are really, really getting stressed out. So we looked at why that is. And we came up with three things that are core, and you want to see if these three things of the people listening are in your family. Number one, in the first time in history, our kids are more influenced outside the home than inside the home. In a recent article I wrote on teen suicide, more and more kids are not able to really have time with their family, like the dinner table is a pit stop. If you go out to dinner, you see some families not even talking to each other, but texting each other. So what's happening is, and professors are saying that kids say they're socialized, but they haven't had any direct contact with people. It's all through social media. So you've got a generation, first generation, where technology is influencing our kids more than ever.
Yeah.
Another reason that's happening is that we've got kids with nature deficit disorder, where, you know, we used to have kids play outside the neighborhoods were just, you could hear people talk and play and neighbors were outside, but neighborhoods are now quiet because, you know, the iPhone family has taken over. And so when kids are not quiet, they cannot unplug from technology, their brain isn't still, they can become anxious, depressed, unbalanced, and traumatized. So those are a few things that we saw. And then the last one is our tribes are gone. Our parents have to do everything themselves. We often don't know our neighbors' names anymore, and we are isolating more and more. So that's the perfect storm. The good news is that there's something we can do about it, but we need to know that we're living in a different society, so we have to have different rules, ways to treat it.
Now, again, joining us on Heart to Heart with David Disty, not alone with David, but also Dr. Scott Sells. For more information from what we've talked about today, visit familytrauma.com. Of course, we have plenty of time to dive in a bit more specifically with each of these topics, and we'll take a quick commercial break, but more with David and Dr. Sells when we come back on All You Ever Wanted to Know and Heart to Heart with David Disty. We're back here on All You Ever Wanted to Know, Heart to Heart with David Disty and also Dr. Scott Sells from the Family Trauma Center. And we're just talking a bit more now about how, well, that's a Time article you referenced, Dr. Sells, about how the alarming stat showing anxiety and depression is just skyrocketing especially the younger generation, about 30% of girls, 20% of boys in the States, similar stats, I'm sure, to be reported here in Canada, just because the similar ways we're raising our children, Western society, and all the rest. I just know that with what we're going to talk about today, I know as of right now, we're kind of addressing what's gone wrong. We do want to provide a lot of hope for people out there, too. And we're going to dive into like what we can do to really help out our kids as we raise them. And I know with all the efforts and strides that we can make towards helping them, hey, it may not solve anything either. They still might need help with some mental health issues and all the rest. This is like anything, through many different illnesses or diseases, if you will. Yes, some of them are inevitable, out of our control, but at the same time, there are things that we can do together to really put our youth in the best situation to succeed. And that's what we're really going to dive into today.
Yeah, and I think you nailed it, that we can do these things together. Just before the break, Dr. Sells mentioned that our tribes are gone. We still have the phrase that it takes a village to raise a child, but how much do we use that village? Together, not just in our nuclear family, but opening up to extended family, to the good supports of friends and the professional resources that are out there, we can use that tribe, that community, that village to help everybody, not just the child, but everybody involved to grow and do better.
And it's the real life people, the faces that we see. We're not talking here about the worldwide tribe, because
we're not talking about Wikipedia
or Google even. It's leaving us astray. One thing I heard, Dr. Sells, maybe you can comment on this phrase that I heard, the danger about the internet, but also the greatest thing about the internet, it's the same sense. The best thing about the internet is that everyone has a voice. The worst thing about the internet is that everyone has a voice. What are your thoughts when you hear something like that?
Yeah, I agree. I think anything like that has the potential for, you know, healing and also hurting. I mean, one thing that I'm seeing more and more men in treatment is that I had one man say, you know, there's a Me Too movement for women, but we should also have hashtag Me Too movement for men. Men, especially, and women, recognize this, that they have to be everything to each other now, and the kids have a front row seat to this, and there's more and more, of course, couples getting divorced. So in the old days, when couples married, it was still, you know, through thick and thin, And now it's more of until we get tired of each other in some ways. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. I think one husband said it best. He said, with technology, my kids are detaching, but so am I. I watch Netflix all the time. I'm tired. I'm more, you know, so my wife now has to be my best friend, my lover. We have no friends. And so the pressure on the marriage, you have to be everything to that person. Mm-hmm. We don't have your extended family right next door to help offset the stress, or you don't go out with your friends anymore because you just email them. It's a tremendous stress on the children when the parents as well as the kids are on Google.com and they're checking their social account instead of talking to one another. I had one parent say that she tried to friend her teenager on Facebook just to communicate with them instead of knocking on their bedroom door and asking to talk. So I think Benjamin Franklin was much quoted as saying that with technology, we would be down to a 2-hour work week. Mm-hmm. It just seems to be a paradox where the more technology takes over, the more we seem like we're working harder just to keep up. There's a real danger right now.
Well, and also danger too, like you referenced the stat about how the first time in our history, kids are being more influenced outside the home than from inside the home. I think the same could be said too, even for just adults as well, being influenced in terms of by what they find through Google, if you will, through searching things. And I mean, like I go back to the quote I heard before, the risk there being is that people are just finding essentially things that, well, they already agree with. That's what Google algorithms and all the rest have been proven to show, is that that's often what they're going to spit to people. It's not necessarily it's the right thing or the wrong thing. It's going to give the people what they want to hear. And that's a very dangerous thing. Instead of relying on those face-to-face relationships with the neighbor down the street, our mothers, our fathers who have already lived this life before us, grandparents even as well, rather than ask them about, hey, what do you think I should do about this?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you a personal example just from the other night in my own life that just brought up something for me, was that, you know, I'm exhausted at the end of the day with the kids. So is my wife. And before Netflix and Instagram and Facebook, we would get a book. We would talk. We would cuddle. Now, we both go to Netflix or Instagram, and we just detach, and we medicate, and I'm not even going down to see my kids at night because I almost need that cobweb to deal with the spider of just exhaustion. So it's very tempting when the pictures on our wall are replaced by flat screen TVs, and it's so easy for us to get into infidelity through the internet. And so it's really, somebody once said to me that the sewage around our ankles in the 60s and 70s got up to our knees in the 80s and is now up to our waist in the 90s, and in the 2000s, we don't even feel the sewage anymore because we're desensitized to it. So it's very difficult and stressful for the family right now. There's little foxes that are constantly stealing a lot of our intimacy and nurturance between us and our kids, and it's not getting any better.
Yeah. There's a great book that this reminds me of. David Benner wrote a book called Sacred Companions, and he talks about how we need to know and be known, not just to kind of be engaged on a surface level, like through social media, but to be known and to know others on that deep level. And so that speaks to face-to-face conversation and deep face-to-face conversation too. And that helps us to grow to be the elders in our community that's kind of become missing. When we're isolated, then we're not looking to the elders who are kind of those sources of wisdom. We're looking to somewhere else. And so to be connected with each other,
I wrote an article last month on familytrauma.com on teens and suicide. And the irony of irony in there is I embedded a video clip by Steve Jobs, who was interviewed and said that he would not allow his own kids to use any iPads or iPhones. And so he said it would be detrimental to our children and it would disintegrate our family. Mm-hmm. And ironically, he was the, you know, known as the inventor of this technology. So I thought that was ironic that the inventor of a lot of this technology wouldn't even let his own kids use it. So that was pretty telling.
Well, recognizing at least that, they are a dangerous device if left in the wrong hands, if you will. Like, the age of a phone user has just dramatically dropped. It's just remarkable how that has transpired over the years, just because I remember when I was in high school, there was only maybe a handful of people who had cell phones. I realize I'm a little bit younger than David across from me. I don't know if anyone had cell phones at school when he was going to school, but
no.
So. No. But then there it started to drop. And now we're talking about how a parent thinking that, oh, even little Jimmy, who's in grade 6 or 5 or 4, even should keep one, even if it's in their backpack, just in case. Well, why? Really? Yep. Why? What has changed that has led to that? The world isn't, the stats have shown, it's not as scary of a world. I know we're being bombarded with the message that the world's scarier now than it was maybe 30, 40 years prior, but the statistics have shown, no, it's just as safe or even safer than it was before.
Well, I mean, even the kids that were in the cave the other day, I mean, it tells you that human beings are highly resilient and will not walk to the light, they'll run to the light. And so I think it's like, you know, exposing these spiders in our lives, because I think, well, I have plenty of hope for the family, the 21st century family. It's just, we just have to get the message out. Like, here's one example. If there's a listener on the phone who sees that their son or daughter, let's take the example of their son, is starting to get really down into technology and they're losing them. One idea is that there's a book called Wild at Heart by John Eldridge. And basically the message is that boys especially have to have their fathers say, you have what it takes, son. I'm proud of you. And so just jump-starting the family by intentionally recommending as an intervention that the father takes the son out in the wilderness, camping, restores and refreshes the relationship unbelievably, even though the son may say no. I'll have to encourage the father to say, you know, don't take no for an answer. But it's rebooting our system towards nature and relationship, and it starts to bring kids out of a fog, and parents as well. It's amazing. We go to Montana every summer, and we intentionally unplug our TVs, and we are wild at heart in the wilderness, and it just is the happiest times we have.
And this is where I'm excited that we're getting now into what we can do. I think we've dumped long enough about, you know, the wrong ways that we're headed as society, because there is hope, there is things we can do together to get us back on track in some ways, or at least make ourselves a lot more healthy. And we're going to continue chatting today on Heart to Heart with David Disty and All You Ever Wanted to Know with Dr. Scott Sells when we come back after this on The Rock. And back on Heart to Heart, All You Ever Wanted to Know with David Disty as our guest today, and also Dr. Scott Sells from the Family Trauma Center. Where we've gone wrong in some ways as society, maybe not even where we've gone wrong, David, but where I guess society and technology has kind of thrust us in, and sometimes we just ride along, and I guess some of the things that can go wrong with some of the things we're going through, how social media or anti-social media has really taken hold of all of us. This is more than just our young people, but adults as well. Dr. Sells, you were talking about how sometimes it's you and your wife just unwinding, staring at your smartphones. I can relate. My wife and I sometimes, it's the last 30, 45 minutes awake, and then finally when that's all done, turn over, well, night, hon, and there we go. But obviously something like that, well, it's making a commitment to, hey, just let's put those phones down. Let's put that TV off maybe a bit earlier in the day or not turn it on for an extended period of time. These are just some of the easiest ways we can start from the get-go. And I guess in some ways, it's not a complete elimination, because to go cold turkey, boy, that's going to be tough. But even just simple steps in the right direction can go a long way.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's lots of stuff we can do as well.
I think there's three steps that your listeners could take that are a good beginning. You know, the first is, you know, understanding from earlier in the call some of the unique deficits or challenges in the 21st century parenting. Those highlighted earlier are, you know, sometimes we're seeing that outside the family is having more of an influence on our kids than ever before. We're seeing more and more pressure on the couples because, you know, they don't have access to their village as much as they used to. We're seeing, you know, technology really stealing away nurturance. So those are some unique deficits. I also wrote a book called Parenting Your Out of Control Teenager that you can order off Amazon that gives you some tools, but I'm going to highlight a few tools that are just for this specific topic. So first, recognizing some of the deficits is important. Insight is important. Knowledge is power. Secondly, you really want to get with your spouse or even your ex-spouse and say, can we come to agreement about detoxifying the home of technology? As Jordan, you were saying, you know, you can't go cold turkey. So you want to test out, you want to set boundaries. You want to put it on a poster board for everybody to see. And you can even have the kids be part of the discussion, because if they're co-owners of the solution, there's going to be more cooperation and compliance. So for our home, for instance, we are, you know, eliminating screen time for dinner. We are eliminating screen time before bed. We're having a game night now. And what happens is even our 9-year-olds with their Kindle Fire, we've noticed that there's some addiction to it. You know, when we take it away, they start to go into shakes almost. And so, we have to fight for one time per week, a special outing with just the family. And we wrote it down. So when we wrote it down and it's on a poster, we're more accountable to it. Mm-hmm. Too often families just do everything verbally and nothing written. So detoxify the home, with some limited screen time. David, do you have anything to add on that, or do you agree with that?
Well, I think that's great, writing it down, making it explicit so that everybody knows these are the rules, these are what we're shooting for, rather than if it's just verbal, then we have a tendency to go back to what the norm was. Okay, yeah, sure, we talked about limiting screen time, but maybe we can just let it slide. But yeah, if you have it written there and everybody sees it and holds each other accountable, then yeah, there can be a whole lot more success.
Well, and if I can add too, I think redirection, we've talked about that with other, parental experts too, that just talk about how it's one thing to just take away something that's a bad behavior in a child, that's maybe putting themselves in a dangerous circumstance, like they're standing on top of the kitchen table. What are you doing, kid? You might crack your head if you're not careful. Well, no, it's not just a case of telling them no. It's about then actually putting them somewhere else and giving them something that's a lot more beneficial or healthy for them to do. So it's a much safer activity. It's, in this circumstance with the screen time, it's shutting off that TV and maybe the Kindle or the smartphone, but then also taking it a step further, not leaving it to say, okay, now you got to find something else to do. Well, they'll find something else to do, and that will be the whining and the complaining. If you instead say, actually, you know what, we're going to turn that off and we're either going to play a board game together or we're going to, like, some sort of age-related activity, go for a walk, play catch, play with Legos, something else. The best thing the parent can do.
That is such a great point, because you know, I found myself sometimes doing only part of the solution. Like, it was easy for me to say, let's turn the TV off. Mm-hmm. Then to make the complete switch, it required me to change my behavior because I was relying on the technology as a great babysitter.
Sure.
I was relying on the lie that kids need to be entertained all the time. Mm. I was relying on the lie that they couldn't live without technology. So I had to reboot and fake it till I make it because mm-hmm. I was tired to play Uno Attack or, you know, to read. And it's still a challenge.
Yeah.
Because I was having to detoxify at the same time my kids were.
And that's just
and so if I didn't if I didn't replace a negative with a positive, then my kids were like, my son said, well, why should we do it when you're doing what you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're telling us not to watch Netflix, but you're on Netflix. So that was a nice cold water hitting my face. So the other day we did, you know, as tired as I was, we did a water balloon fight.
Mm-hmm.
And all I wanted to do was go to technology. And I was like, you know what? I've got to do what I got to do what I say and do what I do instead of do what I say not as I do. And so
mm-hmm.
I think that's something that is real. And you have to know that it takes two to tango.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you guys have ever experienced that tension point, but I just wanted to have full disclosure.
Yeah, and I think it's good to make sure that we're aware, too, that there will be pushback, both from ourselves, because, yeah, like you said, we're detoxifying as well, and from the kids who are going to go, no, wait, I want what was happening. I want that back. So don't give up because there is pushback. Don't give up because that's, but keep on pushing through and you can make it work.
Well, and take a role and a responsibility that you have to do something yourself, because as a parent, the fact that our children have become addicted to this technology, as an example, the screen time, the social media, we, by the lack of our stopping them in the first place, we have to take our own responsibility and step up, realizing that we had our own part in them, I guess, going down this rabbit hole. Yeah, it's going to be a large part in us to take the lead, be a positive example, and how we can hopefully change up the routine and initiate things like family meal time, family board game night, family outings. Even if, yeah, we've had a long day at work and we feel completely wiped, well, again, if we just decide to slip back into, you know, old habits, so we're all going to, well, be left in the same place we started.
Yeah, and I like how you said that we need this family time, and we're always so tired. It's also important to make sure that we have time that we're re-energizing ourselves. So to have family time, to have date time, to have individual time. Like, my wife and I have set up that every Wednesday evening, I don't have anything to do with bedtime. I go out and do my thing. Every Friday evening is hers. And then we have our family time, date time too. So it's important to have our time as well.
Good point.
So the term that I use with families is sometimes called protective factors.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, you know, when I say to a family, let's go through the back door on this, obviously you want a contract for disrespect. I think it's both and. So, but while we're dealing with the disrespect contract and being consistent with limit setting, let's also go through the back door and get to the root of it. And so, why not try as an experiment a special outing once a week with your child? So you would sit down at the kitchen table and write it out, so it makes it more real. Or you might just go in the morning for breakfast, Sunday morning or Saturday morning, and kids will tell us over and over again, you know, Dr. Sells, it really isn't about quantity, it's about quality.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's an old saying, but if my dad does that, and my mom does that, or my stepfather does that, it just takes the edge off, and it makes it hard for me to be disrespectful after that. What I was trying to do with the disrespect is I was doing a very unhelpful way to get noticed. And what I was really doing, and I didn't even know this, is I was having nurturance deficit disorder with my parents. and I just needed to connect with them without technology, and I didn't know it until you gave me this, our family, this intervention, and then we did it, even if we had to fake it till we make it. So protective factors, both for the adults, going out on date night. Right now I have Daddy Day, and it really insulates the family from some of the storms that are going to be hitting them now and in the future. I hope that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So yeah, you're cleaning out the cobwebs with these boundaries and rules, and you're killing the spider with those special bonding times, those good quality times.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. Kill the spider.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Excellent. So what other ways can we work on detoxifying the home or doing other things to kill that spider?
The biggest thing is that our mental health counselors also have to be trained in how to work with the whole family. So what happens times is people, both couples and families, wait till way beyond they should. Mm-hmm. Because they're like, there's a stigma attached to mental health counseling. Or so what I educate parents to do is take more of a proactive approach where they're the consumer and they can think of it as more coaching. So they could look up on the internet, family therapy counselors. They can also look for the terms like solution focused counselors or family trauma counselors. And just say to the counselor, you know, you're not emotionally involved. We need you as a coach. Can you help us with some of these plans or playbooks? So parents can actually educate themselves by going to our website at familytrauma.com and then take that information, because knowledge is power, and say, hey, we're not mentally ill, but we want to prevent. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and we're stuck here. So could we have one or two coaching sessions, and can we get unstuck? I wish there was a grid more for families to see counseling from that perspective,
mm-hmm.
instead of like, my kid's mentally ill and depressed, now we have to go to counseling. So we do that with massage, we do that with diet, we do that with, you know, different things, but we unfortunately don't see it from the same lens with you know, trauma or signs of stress.
Yeah,
it's a great point you make, though, just even in relation to the diet as an example. Just I can relate to just how much easier something like, say, Weight Watchers was when I can do it alongside my wife, when we're all mm-hmm. on the same page in the household. It's a case of we're still all just making one meal. It's not that she's going to make a meal for her and the kids, and then I'll make my nice little Weight Watcher meal over here. No, we can all be on the same page together to all live a bit more healthy. Likewise for taking care of mental health, too. Yeah, there might be someone who needs or is the central focal point, if you will, of needing help more than anyone else. But it's the whole family coming together to support that person and all coming together to see the counselor. I know, David, for yourself, just from working with you, I can recall you just mentioning how, yeah, you know, we can do certain things, but the more people that we can get mm-hmm. involved, the more help it's going to feel like you can get from something like counseling.
Yeah. So often people bring in like a child and say, hey, can you fix Junior? And my response is, I can work with your child. I can do things that will help. But I'll see them 1 hour a week for maybe 5-6 sessions and then maybe never see you again. But you're working with that child day in and day out. So how about I help you, kind of maybe train you to be the one to help Junior there? We can do this together. And also, like Jordan, you said that sometimes it seems like one person needs more help than the other. But so often that one person is not necessarily that they need the help, but maybe more that they are a symptom of what's going on in the family or in the community. So sure. If we can help the whole family or whole community to work better, then that one person might not need to carry on that role or to take on that symptom that they've been presenting.
Hmm. That's a good point. Now, and I also think it's, you know, diet is, we think of diet as losing weight. I think of it more as the nutritional brain versus the medicated brain. So many kids today are on medication, and our diet is really, what we eat is really hurting us too. So think of the technology as one piece, but the amount of sugar intake that we have our kids take. I know I'm battling this right now with my kids, but the other night when they had a food dye, they were just, they had all the symptoms of ADD, hyperactivity, and they were, you know, and so when we change the diet back to the, you know, the you know, vegetables and things like that, they totally calmed down. So we were working on the nutritional brain, not the medicated brain. And so one of my sons was on Ritalin, and we were able to get him off that. So a great book is by Dr. Scott Shannon, Parenting the Whole Child, where he really talks about, you know, the nutritional brain. And I think as we're talking, we want to give families both the internal and external solutions to trauma. And a lot of times nutrition is confused with diet. And nowadays we're really seeing a battleground with our kids on diet, or nutrition, I should say. So I think nutrition has to be something that we put a stake in the ground for our families too.
And also, too, going back to something we talked about, where we've gone astray, we've lost our tribe mentality. Let's try and recreate those relationships, too. Let's build back up, getting to know the neighbors right beside us, like interacting in those face-to-face relationships, the street barbecue, if you will, just ways to try and bring some sense back to, you know, it does take a village to raise a child, and it starts right with the people on the same street of us, and not just that global village on the internet.
And of course, we can't forget the research on prayer and connecting with your higher power. Spirituality is something that is oftentimes not talked about with mental health. And we find over and over again, the research is showing us that it has to be included, in the discussion. So I have found both personally and professionally, when families are open to that, that can be a real healer, of the power of prayer, relationship. And so I just think I wanted to also put that as a potential solution, because it's so overlooked today as a potential solution.
Well, as a Christian radio station, we're very happy that you included that as well with from what you've seen and how it's able to help. So we're grateful you included that as well, Dr. Sells.
Yeah, there's so many things that a number of churches offer. Our church, Yorkton Alliance, has a great men's group that has been meaningful to me and a number of other men. So being a part of a group like that can be huge, where you gain that face-to-face relationship. Like I talked earlier about the book Sacred Companions by David Benner, where we need to know and be known. To have those relationships is huge for us.
Yeah, I was just like today, for example, I woke up on the wrong side of the bed, and I said to my wife, I said, would you pray for me? So we went up to the mountains and, you know, praised and worshiped God, and just were in silence and stillness to hear his still small voice. And I'm telling you, that realigned us. And I noticed a big difference between days when I don't connect with God, in Jesus, and days when I do. And so, I mean, I'm telling you, that has been a game changer for me. It was one of the last things on my list, but now it's the first thing on my list. So I always found that when the first fruits of the morning are holy, the rest of the day is holy. So I would just say, parents out there, you know, that I love the movie The War Room. When my kids see that we have a prayer room and that we're contending for them, and I'm contending for my wife in prayer, it's the game changer, and it really detoxifies the family and detoxifies stress. And it has to be intentional. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we get lost in the minutia of the day, or what I call emotional traffic. And once that hits, you know, where the mind goes, the man follows. Mm-hmm. And so there is a battlefield in our mind, make no mistake about it.
Yeah, and to start that off right, start that off with prayer is something that's hard to remember sometimes, but to get in that habit can have a big impact for us. Okay.
Well, that's pretty much all the time we do have. I love the way how we ended it with that discussion there. And I think that's sometimes what can, with all the things that are bombarding us, the inability to sit still, well, it prohibits our ability to sometime to take those quiet moments up in prayer or in spirituality to, you know,
and
let
Jordan,
God's voice fill us
I
in. But yeah,
could I close in prayer today for our listeners?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Okay. Feel free.
Father, we thank you for this opportunity to talk. We know that even if one person listening to the sound of our voice is deeply impacted, it can impact not only their family, their marriage, but entire generations. And it can also break what's called a generational curse. We, the three of us stand together for family, restoration of family, restoration for couples. And we just continue to ask for your blessings, your Holy Spirit to come and help us all in this time of need. But thank you for this time. I believe there's no coincidences. And I just thank you and I'm totally grateful for allowing us this opportunity to talk, to reach the airways about restoration of our family, which is really one of the most important things because you are the Father. So we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.